Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. On this Thursday, I had to remember what day it was for a second. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin, and the one and only Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, on the ones and twos. What's up, JoJo? How are you?
Well, I'm a little bit disheveled right now. And I always remember that when I worked in TV, and if you miss a story, like if your story's supposed to air at 5 o'clock and you miss your slot, and the thing was, hey, remember, 5 o'clock comes around the same time every day. So 9 o'clock rolls around, and I should be more prepared than I'm not. I got books, I got cables, I got pens, I can't find my glasses. Hot mess, but it's okay, I'm here.
Okay, well, we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
It's good to see you. I was just saying before we went on the air that I thought it was appropriate that, you know, we have music playing in the hallway from our other stations because whenever I put the game on, you know, somebody else goes and changes it to music. That's fine, whatever. You know, we'll stop that
right
here soon. But yeah, like you walked in. As soon as you walked in the door, Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles started playing. I instantly felt better.
What more do you think? I expect and think about life than, you know, when I enter the building. And then, you know, when I leave, Dr. Crane's like, Elvis has left the building. We laugh. And then I sit in my car and cry for about 10 minutes.
Because, well, please don't cry.
No, nah, it's an emotional thing. And I feel better once we're done. So we're good to go.
Yeah. That is I don't know if it's my favorite Beatles song, but it's up there. I love that song.
That's a good one.
George Harrison. Okay, so I want to get to we got a lot to get to today. I mean, this is going to be a packed show. Very excited about this show. So John McClain usually joins us on Wednesdays. He's going to join today. But before that, we have Greg Wyshynski at 9:30. We'll talk hockey and Predators with him. And then John McClain will go 10 to 10:30. And then how about this? Comedian Patton Oswalt is going to join us at 10:30. He's going to be in town. He's going to tell us more about that, but I love him. Funny guy. Really going to be cool to have him on.
He is a very funny guy, and so he'll be at City Winery, right? When's Saturday, Friday? One of those days.
Yep, you asked he'll me be before at, I get my notes.
He'll up. Be That's at City cool. Winery, so look forward to talking to him. Tomorrow we got another comedian on the show, right?
I think so,
yeah. But who is
That's
it?
Tomorrow.
We'll let you know. Yeah, let's worry about today now. Oh, Wyshynski.
Yeah.
Do we need a does he have a nickname too?
Wish.
Oh, no, that's too simple.
I mean, that's what.
How about Shawshanky?
I don't know about that.
How about I do know about that? And how about I'll tell him that when he comes on at 9:30?
I bet you won't.
All these hockey people have to have nicknames.
We'll ask him about the nicknames for sure. But I heard this conversation. Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, was on with Robbie and Rex Road about an hour ago. And I immediately, like, when I heard this, I'm like, okay, well, we're going to talk about this, and probably every other show will too. But
all right, I didn't hear it, so let me know.
So this was the question. Basically, the question was, with Caleb Williams, you know, could he go to Chicago, you know, with these teams that have quarterbacks? Well, Charles turned it back around on Robbie and Rex Road and asked this.
You get a bunch of picks, you got no picks.
Right. I'll ask you guys. Okay, the Titans are 2-4, right? Let's just say total worst case scenario unfolds, right, the rest of the season,
yep.
And they somehow end up with the first pick in the draft. Is it even a question? It's not even a question, right? In the bit, like, with all due respect to Will Levis,
I mean, it would be an astounding to me that you just moved up to pick your franchise quarterback.
I think you'd have to consider it, though.
I mean, you have to consider it, but I mean, you're just raising your hand and saying, "Yeah, we're dumb. Sorry."
I mean, okay.
And we thought we were going to be good this year. We were terrible, and we're dumb. And we're going to take a quarterback in the top three rounds for three straight years.
But Joe, here's a question that happens at the ownership level when it comes to decisions like this. Often, you will have an owner, especially in this era, who will ask, "Is this quarterback that we could potentially draft better than the quarterback we have right now? And is it markedly better? I mean, are we talking about a pretty significant difference in terms of what the personnel evaluation was between quarterback A and B? And if it is significant, what are we even talking about here?" Like, that's a real question that happens in buildings.
Sure.
Now, if you're the Titans, you could sit there, Joe. I would say if you have the first pick and you're inclined to stick with whatever quarterback you have or that plan, it's going to be a great asset to trade out of.
Right.
I mean, there's
you get a bunch of picks, you got no picks.
Right.
Okay, so then they continue the conversation after this, and I get it. I mean, like, if this guy truly is a game-changing franchise guy, then, you know, you absolutely have to consider it. But let me, and this is where I think Rex Road was coming from and why I kind of agree with him. This team has so many holes. They need offensive linemen, and they need like a stud tackle. They need a shutdown corner. They need another star wide receiver. I mean, they have so many things that they need.
It's like you're going to Costco.
Basically, that's what they need. So, while yes, you know, you could get that guy, and you know, yes, you could probably trade Levis and get something, but you're not going to get what you would get for the number one overall pick, knowing that they would take Caleb Williams.
Well, what does Mike Vrabel want? That's your bottom. I mean, that's it. What does Mike Vrabel want? What does Mike Vrabel think is best for that football team?
And if you go Mike Vrabel wants to win right now with the ragtag group that he has, and it's not going to happen.
Well, he should. Every head coach should want to win right now it's what he's got. You know, the players he's got right now to get out there on the field and try to win the game. But what does Vrabel want? Does Vrabel think that Caleb Williams is ready to start again? Vrabel's level for quarterback is on another level compared to most anybody else because of who he played with for 8 years in New England. With Tom Brady, he saw Brady from the beginning and saw Brady win 3 Super Bowls and lose another Super Bowl, all that stuff. So I don't think now you start over again with Caleb Williams and you're back, you know, there's still, like you said, there's no tackle, there's no receiver, there's no a lot of things you get to plug and play, and it's not there. But that is an extreme hypothetical because I don't think the Titans are the worst team in the league.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, that's why we're, you know, and yeah. I'm glad you said that because it is a hypothetical. I mean, they're probably not going to get the first overall pick. They're probably not going to pick top 5 because maybe. I don't think they're going to stick at 2 wins. I mean, look, I think that even with – I mean, maybe this is a bigger if, but with Tannehill hurt, you know, they could beat Atlanta. I don't think Atlanta's very good because Atlanta doesn't have a quarterback right now either.
They got John Ritter, so.
R.I.P.
Yeah, right. I don't know, but it's a long – but I'm shocked that the Titans haven't done anything this week. I haven't, you know, maybe traded one guy or not even to talk about. I mean, there's a few rumors.
Why are you shocked? Like, why does that shock you?
I don't know. Because I think we see it from a different perspective than they do. And
of course we do.
We want now. I'm sure they want now, too, as well. But I just think, you know, you've had a couple times. Don't tell me that this week Rand Carthon gets an email from Vrabel like, hey, let's try to see what we can get for guys. They've had this for 2 or 3 weeks.
I really hope that that's how they talk. He just emails him.
You know he does.
Like, doesn't call him, doesn't walk into his office, just sends an email.
But by the way, if Rand Carthon's ringtone is not Flock of Seagulls, I ran so far away, or you walk into his office, then he's really missing an opportunity here.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be funny.
It would be funny.
That would be funny. But look, I'm not shocked because they're stubborn. They're stubborn. They are going to see this through to the very, very end. I will be shocked. Where the shock will come is if there's an announcement of, oh, they've traded X player. If they actually make trades before the deadline. I think they're stubborn. I think they're going to see this through.
What if they do a complete fire sale, man? Just and it's everybody.
If they do a complete fire sale, I will have the same reaction I did when the Predators did it last spring. And that is, you know what? I didn't think they'd do it, but good for them. It's the right move. It's the right move. It's what they should do. But I don't think they're going to do it.
No, they're not going to do it. It's just if they do, they might trade one person for a 5th-round pick from some other team somewhere.
Trades are coming in college football. Just wait.
Yeah, they should. they probably will.
Just wait for that.
So I don't know. It's just the Caleb Williams thing. That's just it's fun to talk about it, but. It ain't going to happen.
I know I'm in the minority with what I'm going to say. Like, I think he's really, really good, but I don't know if I'm ready to go. He's Mahomes.
What round was Brock Purdy drafted in?
He was the 7th round, the last pick in the draft.
Yeah, where was Tom Brady picked in?
6th round, 199.
Yeah, so we can go through the draft history of forever and see guys picked late who were great, see guys picked early who were awful, then see guys who were picked early who were great. I mean, it's just – it's the system you put them in.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And look, I remember sitting at I can't remember the name of the place, but we did the draft show, and it was Jared, Floyd,
Waffle
Derek.
House.
It might have been. It was Huddle House. but we were sitting there on the night of the draft, and that was when the Titans had taken Corey Davis, 5th overall, and everybody was like, what are we doing?
2017.
Yep. And then when Kansas City took Mahomes, we happened to be in break, and Floyd goes, Andy just got a Super Bowl.
No.
Mm-hmm. He liked him. He liked him a lot.
Mahomes was amazing at Texas Tech.
He was, but did you think he'd become what he has become in the NFL?
In the right system. I thought in the right system, you flourish. I mean, Trubisky was a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. What if Trubisky's in that system?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what if the Titans had taken him fifth overall?
They wouldn't have because they had the awful Marcus Mariota.
I know, but
who,
like,
people still defend to this day. Which
trust
just,
me, I'm aware.
Which just baffles me to know. Nice guy, great, but not a good quarterback.
He's a super nice guy. He was not your franchise
quarterback. When they drafted him in 2015, and I was at the draft party, and Kendall Wright and Justin Hunter threw a fit that they drafted Mariota. Then they denied it, and I told Kendall Wright, I said, I got you on video. And he was like, no, you don't. And he walked off. I was like, I got you on video for you. And I wasn't going to show it on TV. But your disdain for them drafting Marcus Mariota was something else. So, I don't know. That's a good question because he would have come in if you take him there. You already had Mariota. Yeah, I mean, you're not. There was no plans to take Patrick Mahomes in 2017.
No, I know. They were going to always do probably what they
did. Well, they already had Mariota. I mean, so.
Yeah,
but
they're trying to build around Mariota.
They take back-to-back quarterbacks in 22 and 23. So, who knows, man?
Could you imagine though if you know we get to you know June or mid May after the draft and the last 3 years and the first three rounds they've taken a quarterback? Which I mean, there's some GMs that would tell you maybe not in those rounds. Like I'd take a quarterback every year if I could.
Well, the Redskins took RG3 and Kirk Cousins in the same. I think Kirk Cousins went fourth round.
Yeah.
RG3 was a top pick, and then.
Yep.
Kirk Cousins, it happens. You
sure.
Take guys, that seventh round to throw away. And I guarantee you with Brock Purdy, like, what do you want to do? He's like, I don't know. And then they're probably laughing. Like, that Brock Purdy could be pretty good. And they're laughing. And then they take him. I mean, the seventh round is just a crap shirt.
But wouldn't you, like, if you had, you know, if you had 10 draft picks every year, wouldn't you take a quarterback every
Absolutely,
year?
I would.
I mean, you never know.
Yep.
You know, you could get a solid backup for a few years, or you could find a diamond in the rough.
That's why Robinson was hoping, like with the Dylan Raiden's pick coming out, you know, from mm-hmm. the small school, the FCS, that maybe he could hit on something like that and be, a, you know, yeah, you got that guy over there. And then, of course, Raiden's was not that good. Plus, he set out 20 the COVID year, which was I get it, but he still was able to prove nothing to your football team. And I don't know. I think a lot of GMs try to be cute with everything that goes on.
615-737-1025. You can weigh in on this. If the Titan, would you take Caleb Williams or would you get draft capital? 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We have a lot of stuff to give away today.
Okay.
We're going to give away KISS tickets. We're going to give away Preds tickets. We're going to give away Patton Oswalt tickets. I mean, we got a lot of stuff. So be listening for your chance to win all of those things. It's the Chase and Big Joe Show, 1025-1063 The Game. Is this Bonanza? No, this isn't Bonanza.
Little House on the Prairie.
Little House, yeah.
Which is by the most depressing television show of all time. So we're doing COVID, which I'm an idiot. I binge watch Little House on the Prairie, right? And it is simply the most depressing TV show of all time. Why people embrace that show.
Yeah, that's not one to binge watch.
And embrace the books. And so I tweeted it out like, hey, why do people watch this? And I got so much 50-50 of like, it's a great show. And people are like, I agree with you. What's going on? There's an episode where they have no money and the wife goes to town to get a part-time job. And the guy that owns a pharmacy, his wife makes fun of her because her clothes are bad. And then she goes home and tells her husband, Michael Landon, and he's upset. So instead of going down there, you know, and kicking the pharmacist's ass, he just kind of starts crying too. I'm like, why am I watching the show? What am I doing here? So when I hear that theme, it's almost
did you eat your bonbons? And
no, I just went outside and cried as well. I'm like, what am I doing here? It's terrible.
Well, there's a lot of
so that. Thanks for that that moment of putting me back in a trance from 3 years ago.
We got to get some Three's Company today. I mean, got to have that on a TV theme Thursday.
You let Dr. Crane run this. He's the Captain Steubing of this ship. And as I say that, Love Boat
I'm
theme.
The director of operations. Love if Boat I want theme. Three's Company, then I'm going to say play Three's Company, and he's going to do it.
Dr. Crane, you got to do what you're told, man.
Just maybe.
So you got two, Love Boat and Three's Company, by the way. By the way, Love Boat would make it today with all the sexual innuendos.
I never liked Love Boat.
What?
No.
How dare you?
Never liked Love Boat.
Why? Do you not like cruises?
I've never been on a cruise.
Do you not like just amazing hookups on a cruise ship that you never would imagine in your life?
Well, I've never been on a cruise ship, so I don't know.
Buddy Hackett and Carol Burnett hooking up? I mean, come on, man. I mean, the possibilities were endless on that show.
Maybe they reboot it, and that's where Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, maybe they met on a Love Boat.
We got to do that question soon. Not this week, but maybe next week.
What, the...
If they do get married, what's the prenup? And what's one thing she can't have? And what's one thing he can't have in the prenup?
A lot of people have weighed in on the Caleb Williams thing. Dylan says, if we start Malik Willis for the rest of the season, we might be the worst team in the league. Yeah, there's some truth to that. Tim says, trade away all tradable assets now. Make a push to be the top pick. Keep Levis and build a team around him with all of the picks. It'd be a tough decision. If they landed the number one overall pick, it'd be a really tough decision. But I do lean with all the holes that they have. You get as many draft picks as possible, and then you build that way.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it before, but now in the age of win, now, I mean, the free agency has become so vital and so important because it's like the portal in college. I mean, you could rebuild your football team in one season, where before it would take 3 to 4 years. I mean, the Cowboys – when Jimmy Johnson took over, were awful, okay? And I think what he did there when he traded Herschel Walker for 78 players with 9 different teams all involved, it really got things going because then you got 89, the Cowboys were still bad. 90, they were like, okay, a little better. They got Emmitt Smith. Then 91, they took off. And, of course, they won the Super Bowls in 92, 93, and 95. But you were able to do that. Now, just the free agency and – did you see, like, guys are disgruntled? What's the – Davante Adams, did you see his quote?
Oh, yeah.
What an idiot. What an absolute idiot. He says, it's not about winning or losing. It's about my legacy. I don't want you on my team.
Yeah, it's.
I don't care how damn good you are. Yeah, it's awful. So I read that quote today that I think Schefter put it out or one of the Rappaport or whatever. He's like, you know, I've only got 2 catches. We're winning, but where am I? And talks about my legacy is important.
Yeah, I don't want that guy in my locker room.
Yeah, so I'd trade him. But you're gone. Get out of here. I'm not going to let you be the cancer in the locker room. That's what he is.
They'll trade him. Well, watch. He'll end up with the Jets next year and be back with Rodgers.
Fine. He can take his legacy, which isn't that great. Has he won a Super Bowl? Has he said? I mean, is he? No.
No.
Isn't the goal to win the Super Bowl? Yep. That's the bottom line, right?
And you know what you need to do that? A team.
Yeah. Right.
You
know, exactly.
You need to play as a team.
Yeah. Well, you know, when Chris Sanders comes on, or has talked about when he played, you know, he said, you know, a lot of the problems with the team were with us, with me, because I was a me kind of guy. Again, you find guys who hate losing more than winning, and you'll find a winning football team.
Yep. Yeah.
Or whatever team. You know, Kirk Gibson, 1988. Spring training. I know Rex Rhodes is a big Kirk Gibson fan, so am I. Gets traded from the Tigers to the Dodgers. He's going to do the final interview at spring training, and the players on his hat put some kind of jock itch cream on the inside of his hat.
Yeah.
And he puts it on, and they're all laughing. He takes the hat off, and he sees all that, you know, the cream and all that other stuff there, and he just snaps. He, like, chases. He's going to fight everybody. That set the tone for the Dodgers team in 1988. Then he comes out, hits the home run, and wins. Oral Hershiser talks about how he said it was like loosey-goosey kind of atmosphere. And then Kirk Gibson shows up and is like, we are a team. We want to win. And that's what should be the only objective of everybody. And they win the World Series. Now, it doesn't happen every time, but there's far more instances where things like that happen that propel a team to a championship than not.
Wes in Clarksville, even if we do have a fire sale and get a bunch of draft picks, can we trust them to pick some players that will help the team? It's a fair question, Wes.
Oh, man.
It's a very fair question. David in Arkansas, it's clear. If you build around Tannehill, soon to be Levis, they'll be great. Levis had no line at UK the final year. See how that went? But look, we need draft capital more than anything. Having a quarterback without having picks to build a line and get weapons is no good. Take this year, for example. Yeah. I mean, David, you're right. You got to, and that's why I'm more inclined to go get, you know, draft picks. And I'm not an expert by any means. I'm not completely 100% sold on Caleb Williams yet anyway.
Well, that thing that came out, but he wants partial ownership of the team, that has not been denied.
No, he can't have that, though.
Partial ownership. You haven't played a down in the NFL, and you're really putting up stats. Somebody said against, you know, L.A. community colleges, and let's see how you do in a big-time environment. And so I just think that just really – whoever's behind the scenes letting him say that or get that out there, that's not good at all.
Jeff in Hendersonville says, not a Caleb Williams fan, but if Drake May is there, I say draft him. Will Levis is cringe and hard to root for. I don't know why.
Because he.
Are you a Vols fan? A lot of the Levis hate is coming from Vols fans.
Yeah. Do you not want a cocky quarterback? I mean, who's confident that goes out there and I'm going to win the games for you and I love my team?
You know what? You're right. You said Little House on the Prairie. That was the Waltons.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Somebody, still.
Thank you.
Chris
is giving you a hard time.
I've got some kind of stress order over the Little House start. Sorry about that. It all sounds the same. Hell, that show's depressing, too. That show, and I met Richard Thomas a few years ago. He came to town, and he did To Kill a Mockingbird. And the whole time I'm thinking, God, what a terrible John Boy, right? And so it was still depressing.
Every time I see the Waltons now, I think of the Family Guy. They do a Family Guy spoof where they have the Waltons and like, good night, John Boy. And he doesn't say anything. Something. It makes me laugh every time.
Oh, so Dr. Crane, you got to find later on the Little House on the Prairie theme, if you don't mind, just so I can get even more depressed today on this wonderful day.
I will add it to the batting lineup.
And my birthday's in 6 days, and I need.
What are you going to do for your birthday? We're going to do something.
Get this out. You still owe me two lunches.
Yeah, I do, don't I?
Yeah. Well, you still owe two lunches. That. Yeah, I don't know if I like doing shows when I'm I don't know, I'm not upset. It's getting cold. I like it when it's 1,000 degrees, and I just know that it's getting colder, and the time change is gonna be getting dark at 2 p.m. and I'm just not a fan of all that.
Well, birthday cake kind of guy.
We'll go to lunch.
What's that?
Your birthday cake kind of guy.
I am not.
Really?
What do you think? So of course I am.
I'm just. Some people don't like birthday cake.
No, I used to go years ago when I was in college. I'd go to the store and don't hate me. I like icing so much that I would stand in there and I would scoop out the icing and eat the icing in the aisle and I would throw it away and I'd leave.
Yeah, don't.
There were no cameras back then.
Always assume big guys like us like cake.
Hey, Nick, I know some big guys that don't like cake, so that's why I was curious.
Best advice I got in my life, Nick, never trust a skinny cook.
That is very true.
That's a good point. Yep.
I grew up with a lot of big cooks in my family.
Good.
Coming up next, I don't know if he's a cook or not.
Shawshanky.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to like that.
That's not up to him to determine whether he likes it or not.
All right. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN going to join us. All right. Quite frankly. Yeah, Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, will join us next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. TV Theme Thursday, a little Three's Company for you. Late, great Suzanne Summers passing away.
Oh, that's right. Forgot about that.
That's why we had to do that, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a great show.
It's a funny one.
Mr. Farley or the Ropers? It's tough. It's okay if you choose both.
Yeah, probably both.
Okay.
I mean, look, they're both really good. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Let's bring in Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, who joins us every Thursday at 9:30 to talk Preds and NHL. Greg, what's up?
I'm good, man. I think we just got a glimpse at what sports talk radio was in the early 1980s with the Frillies or Mr. Roper. the Ropers versus Mr. Furley, a good debate. But, yeah, it's been interesting. Like, that show was so ubiquitous for a certain generation because of reruns, right? Like, I certainly wasn't around for the first run of it, but it was always on, like, you know, your local Fox affiliate or TBS for a while, and just became kind of a thing.
Yeah, if you were a kid of the 80s, Greg, you know, you got HBO and you'd watch like Red Dawn. I don't remember seeing Red Dawn in the theater, but I watched it a billion times on HBO, and those shows all become so beloved, so you're exactly right.
Yeah, and the problem is that then you start, you know, you still make references to them in 2023, knowing that literally no one is going to understand when you say, Patrick Swayze taught me you have to drink the deer's blood after you kill it in order to ingest its spirit, which is one of the great lessons that Red Dawn gave us. But yes, again, in 2023, how many people, first of all, how many people are getting that reference in like 1990
right,
versus how many people are getting that reference in 2023? But that's the plate. You know, this is what happens. There's so much stuff in this dumb brain of mine that is just retained from pop culture, and it's relevant to maybe three people on the planet.
So you, before we get into the Preds, I was reading your article you put out on ESPN Plus earlier about judging NHL overreactions after 1 week of the 23-24 season, and I love these things because I think it's probably safe to say that just about any reaction is an overreaction at this point. But you know, I think like your first one with the Devils, a team that, you know, you're right there with, can't recapture the Magic. You call that an overreaction right now. I still think that's a really good hockey team.
I do too. And you know, it's funny, the overreactions, some of them actually come true. Like,
yeah,
and we find out at the end of the season that they weren't overreactions. I was looking at last year's column, and one of them was, you know, reports of the Bruins' demise have been greatly exaggerated, and then they go and like have the best regular season of all time. So I mean, it's funny how some of these things actually do play out. In the case of the Devils, you can tell that there's like two things weighing on them right now. One is obviously the weight of expectations. You know, a lot of people had them maybe even coming out of the East this year after taking the step they took last season, the increase in points and then beating the Rangers in the playoffs. Like, they were amongst the three or four teams out of the Eastern Conference that people were looking at as a potential, you know, Stanley Cup finalist. And I'm sure that those expectations weigh on them. And the second thing is, from a logistics standpoint, they lost two good veteran defensemen from their blue line. They lost Damon Severson, who they traded to Columbus, and they lost Ryan Graves, who signed with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And while neither of those guys is exactly Roman Josi back there, they're both really good at a couple of things. And one of them is breaking out passes to lead the Devils into their transition game, where they were dominant last year. So I think they're kind of learning a little bit about life without those guys. They haven't looked like themselves, but I'm with you, man. Like, I think they're going to be all right.
You have one. Is this another wasted season of McDavid's and Draisaitl's primes? I just saw them firsthand Tuesday night when they put a six spot up on the Predators, and I can tell you, watching them live, as I know you've seen them, I mean, they're special, and I think that's a really good team in the Edmonton Oilers. But I think it's a fair question to ask, because we've thought they were a really good team for the last several years, and they don't have a cup to show for it.
Now, is Leon Draisaitl formally listed as one of the owners of the Predators, or does he just like own them informally?
I think he owns them informally.
Yeah. So the thing about the Oilers and their first three games are kind of like indicative of the plight of these two guys. You know, they really get manhandled by the Vancouver Canucks in their first two games, and then you see them against the Predators, and it's like a totally different team. In the sense that they get a great supporting cast performance, and then they also get really good goaltending from Jack Campbell. And so, you know, there are certain things they're going to need in order to become that Stanley Cup contender that they want to be. And you know, you start to wonder whether it's going to come together for them this season, or if it's going to be another year where McDavid and Draisaitl are left wanting more. I like the fact that they've got this kind of Fogel, Nugent Hopkins, Hyman line seems to be playing well. They do need either Skinner or Jack Campbell to give them a performance in the playoffs that's, you know, not stealing a series, but certainly not losing a series. And then overall, defensively, they just have to get better. You know, even McDavid and Draisaitl need to be better in that category, despite how good they are. So we'll see if it comes together. But, I mean, the overreaction early is, you know, the same sort of inconsistencies that we see from this team year after year seem to still be there, and if that's the case, then we might be robbed again of Draisaitl and McDavid playing for a cup.
Talking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN.
right, Greg, most pro coaches that I talk to like to, especially the NFL, like to break the season down in quarters after four games, eight games on that. You know, with the NHL, it's 20 games, and you know a lot can be said those 20 games. But at what point, when you start out of the gate so slow, does it become like, oh, this team has got a long way to go? Is it that quarter point, the 20 games, or can you look now and say, oh, man, this isn't – what they're doing now is not good?
It's usually the 20-game mark, which was sort of interesting to see teams already – kind of panicking a little bit. Like the Tampa Bay Lightning, John Cooper, their coach, who I mentioned in the column, you know, called their game against Buffalo critical the other day. That's like their third game of the season. Yeah. And so, you know, he's under some unique pressure in the sense that, you know, his best goalie, Andre Vasilevsky's out with an injury for 2 months. And, you know, there's all this stuff with Stamkos off the ice and him not having a contract. And it's a different vibe with Tampa Bay than it's been for the last several seasons. So you can kind of feel maybe Coop's trying to like light a fire under these guys, but you know, it's different pressures for different teams. I think the 20 game mark is usually when teams are going to take a serious look at what they have and what they've done, but you're already kind of feeling it in certain places. I mean, whether it's the wins and losses or simply just wanting guys to play a certain way. I think, you know, for example, Rick Tocchet called out the Vancouver Canucks the other day for playing soft in a loss to the Flyers. And that's a coach really trying to emphasize how he wants them to play and not seeing it and calling them out pretty quickly in order to try to change that course.
I know you can't deal the schedule is what it is. And the Preds had to go to Boston and now they play in New York. How critical would it be though to go up there and get this big win against the Rangers, you know, these young guys in that iconic setting at Madison Square Garden? I think that would go a long way for this hockey team confidence wise, if they got a victory tonight.
Yeah, it's super critical. I'll be at that game tonight, by the way. I'm interested to see what the Preds look like under Andrew Brunette. And I'm reminded, by the way, that the first time I ever talked to Andrew Brunette as a head coach was at MSG right after he took over for Joel Quenneville in Florida, which was obviously a much different situation than him taking over in Nashville for a lot of reasons. So I'm interested to see how they're going to play against the Rangers team that is clearly one of the better ones in the East. You know, a veteran team that's been together for a while under Peter Laviolette now as their head coach and with, you know, one of the best goalies on the planet, Igor Shesterkin. So, yeah, it's important for them to you know, continue to progress forward, to recover from a pretty you know, stout loss against Edmonton. And you know, you want to start to see a little bit more of an offensive uptick from certain guys in the roster. And see what this Brunette system is actually going to play out as this season.
Talking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, and yeah, I'm curious. So, of how many times you've gotten to talk to him or listen to him? Because I know in his press conferences, I've been very impressed after games, especially whether it's a win or a loss, in the detail that he goes into on things that he saw throughout the course of the game. And I mean, he doesn't mince words either. I mean, he was talking the other night that he goes, I feel like we didn't play as poorly as the score shows, but we're still not wanting to do a lot of the little things like getting in the greasy areas and scoring goals that way. And those are the things that we need to do. And I appreciate that honesty, and the players that I've talked to seem to appreciate it too.
Yeah, and that was the big thing in Florida. You know, he was there as an associate coach under Quenneville and then took over when Quenneville resigned. And, you know, his calling card was to be that player's coach, you know, to be the guy who had open communication with the guys on the ice. And I think it's been kind of his calling card as being a head coach. And, you know, in the times I've interacted with him, you know, as a head coach in the media, he's always been pretty candid about, you know, what the team is doing, what it's not doing. He sort of doesn't have a filter to that end. But, you know, he's an interesting guy. You know, I don't know if we've talked about it in the past, but he was a guy that didn't always know he was going to be on this track to be a head coach. He was an executive for a while with the Minnesota Wild. He was kind of just trying to figure out what it is he wanted to do. And then he came aboard the staff in Florida. And then, you know, when the Quenneville thing happened, was kind of thrust into that role as a head coach. And then I guess he kind of found the track because he became an associate coach with Jersey and orchestrated their power play and then obviously took this opening. So it's an interesting thing when, you know, you have guys that retire and it seems like their destiny is to be behind the bench or be in the front office. And then you have guys that sort of have to figure it out. And clearly there's something about coaching that he's really been drawn to and he's good at it. So why not?
So with the Rangers tonight, Peter Laviolette, do you feel like that's ultimately going to work with that roster, with, you know, guys like Panarin and Trocheck and Zibanejad, you know, that Laviolette and his style, and we know that style very well here in Nashville, that, you know, after a while it does kind of wear thin, but do you think it'll work on the bright lights of Broadway?
Well, like you said, I mean, it wears thin, but not usually in year one. And that usually goes for him and for other coaches of his ilk. You know, his hiring there was just kind of like a bummer a little bit because they fired Gerard Gallant rather spectacularly after they were beaten by the Devils in the playoffs. And there was, you know, a lot of questions about, okay, well, if it's not Gallant behind the bench, who do you have in mind? And, you know, there was names like Quenneville thrown around and others thrown around. And Hines came up, yeah. And then they end up bringing Laviolette in. It's kind of like, oh, so this is like the guy who's now on his, you know, fifth or sixth team that you're bringing in to coach what should be potentially a Stanley Cup contender. And there was sort of a little deflating feeling, I think, when they ended up settling on Laviolette. And settling is probably the word for it. But that being said, I mean, you know, he takes – it's not so much what he's going to do for the team or not do for the team. It's the team that he's taking over. I mean, this is, you know, you look around the NHL and you think of teams like Carolina, for example, and Vegas, for example, and maybe Dallas is a good example of teams that just seem like they've had the same roster for like the last three seasons. And the Rangers are kind of one of those teams where this group in particular, and there have been some additions here and there, like Trocheck you just mentioned. This group in particular has kind of just been together now for the last couple of seasons. And that core is good and their defense is good. And they obviously have Shesterkin back there. So if nothing else, I'm really curious whether a group that, you know, maybe has already hit its ceiling can still level up and play for a cup, or if there needs to be some changes internally. Because the real question about the Rangers, and this is nothing I don't think Laviolette's going to help, is whether they're built to play in the NHL in 2023. Like, it's a speed league. The reason they lost the Devils is because they were skated out of the building in four games of that series. And they don't really have a way to change that because it's built into their DNA. There's no real way to change that right now for the Rangers. And I think that's probably their biggest flaw.
Chase, name those three players again you just said to him. What were their names again?
Artemi Panarin, Vincent Trocheck, and Mika Zibanejad.
Just last name. It sounds like medicine for ED. I was like, what in the world? What in the world's going on there? Greg, I always give the bad question, so I'm curious. You go to a lot of games at the Garden. You know, we always see the celebrities on the front and second row at the Knicks games and the Rangers games, but is it an intelligent crowd that goes to these hockey games up there that know what's going on with this hockey team?
Yeah, there definitely are, and you know, the Ranger crowds are very interesting because you get, you know, diehards that sit upstairs, they come in their jerseys. You've got suits downstairs that are, you know, on their corporate tickets, entertaining clients, and then you get a lot of celebrities, man. Like, it ain't the level you would get at a Knicks game necessarily, but it's definitely you definitely get a few celebrities at these games. I mean, a couple of the actors from Stranger Things end up at the Ranger games. We have had Margot Robbie show up to a Ranger game in a Rangers jersey. Michael J. Fox, like they nice. Do a thing where every game they're showing people on the Jumbotron that they're at these Ranger games, and sometimes it's surprising who they pull. I mean, Timothy Chalamet was at a Ranger game, like a Ranger playoff game. They put him on the Jumbotron, so it's not just like the fifth actor from The Sopranos that they
right.
get to the Rangers games. Well, it's like actual celebrities sometimes.
Well, the Preds put up one of our hosts on their board and he got booed, so I'm not sure we're going to do that anymore.
I have never seen anybody get booed, and that's saying something because sometimes they do put up like New York athletes, and you figure like the Jets fans would boo the Giants coach or, you know, vice versa,
right.
but it's never like that at the place.
Nice.
Yep. It's a cool time at the Garden. That is for sure.
Are we going to tell them the nickname we have for him? We're going to let that go.
You can't. It's your nickname. It's not.
Well, you know, we had Greg. We had Hal Gill was on the day. He was talking about Bruno, and I'm thinking, who the hell's Bruno? And it was a nickname for Andrew Brunette, right? So I had no idea. They all these hockey nicknames that go on. So we were trying to come up with a nickname for you. And Chase says, we'll just call him Wish.
Well, that's it, right? That a lot of people call you that, right?
That is true, yeah. That is sort of the shorthand, but that's mainly because people are afraid of my last name.
Well, I say we embrace it and call you Shawshinky.
Wow.
Right? Like the great movie that nobody saw in the theaters.
That was unexpected.
You're welcome. You can take that from me. I don't mind, buddy.
Well, I like it because, you know, Shawshank essentially is the thing that you find by accident,
yes,
on the table, and then you just like immerse yourself in it. So I think there's probably a parallel to my writing. I have to do. I mentioned this on Twitter before, but like, so Patton Oswalt's coming on the show,
yes,
today.
Sir. Yes, sir. Yep.
So this is hilarious because, you know, one of the things that has always been said to me is that, and this is probably just because I have a big moon face and I'm funny, is that people have called me a slightly skinnier Patton Oswalt throughout my life. So I was saying, like, this is probably the closest in proximity I've ever come to him. So I don't know. There may be a rip in the space-time continuum at some point during your conversation with me and him being on the same show so closely together.
We'll let you know how it turns out for sure. Hey, appreciate it as always, my friend, and we'll talk next week.
Anytime.
Thanks. Greg Wyshynski joining us from ESPN. Always a good time with him. We'll have more coming here on the Chase and Big Joe show. But right now, your chance to win a pair of tickets. I got to pull it up because I don't remember which game it is. Predators, and it's Saturday night. Predators and San Jose Sharks. Saturday night at Bridgestone Arena. Caller number 5-615-737-1025 will win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Sharks this Saturday, October 21st, at Bridgestone Arena. Join in on the fun and help celebrate the 25th anniversary season and 25 years of Smashville. Tickets available at NashvillePredators.com/tickets. Exciting and little Love Boat on a TV theme Thursday. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Big Joe with you. Appreciate Greg Wyshynski for joining us. We'll have John McClain from Houston coming up in just a few minutes. Patton Oswalt at the bottom of the next hour.
Looking forward to that. I'm going to ask Patton Oswalt how my co-host cannot stand Love Boat. And I'm just kind of, it's kind of throwing me for a loop today. I got to get past that later on.
Well, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But, you know, looking through his, like, on IMDb, like, everything that he's been on,
uh-huh,
you know, he was on King of Queens. He was a regular on King of Queens. But, like, all the guest appearances that he's made on different shows over the years. Like, I love the show Burn Notice. He was on there for a few episodes.
That's right, he was, wasn't he? Yeah.
Two and a Half Men, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He played, like, 10 characters on there. I mean, he's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He was in 22, or made a cameo in 22 Jump Street. I mean, he's been in so many different things.
He's also the same height as Justin Beasley.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
So he's
he is. Do people know who Justin Beasley is?
We do. That's all that we know.
I mean, he gives an opinion on Twitter every now and then.
It's usually wrong. That's all right, though. Man.
That's okay. Predators and Rangers tonight. I'll have pregame coverage for you at 5 o'clock. Max Herz, Hal Gill will be on the call. Pete Weber will be back in the booth on Saturday for the home games, for the three home games, and then Max will handle the big road trip that they will go on, as they do every November when the Country Music Awards.
Don't you dare say CMA road trip.
I didn't. I'm just explaining what it is.
Don't you dare say CMA road trips at
just
all.
Just explaining what happens. All right. Sorry.
How dare you?
How dare me
to do all that? Also,
so do you feel better that you got Love Boat?
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Dr. Crane, for that. I do feel better. I'm actually having a time walking down memory lane for this Tennessee-Alabama game on Saturday, tweeting out iconic moments from the Bama Tennessee games throughout the years. Obviously, there's a few moments which stand out. The Joey Kent touchdown in 1995, the Dell Jones tip pass in 85, Johnny Jones running crazy over Bama in 83. I know it's one-sided. I know Bama's won, you know, 98% of the games there, but the times Tennessee has won this football game have been really exciting. I go back to last year in that game up in Neyland, which probably will be forever ingrained
in
memories.
I mean, that was such a great football game
to top with everything that goes on.
I loved that game.
It was great. Bama had 47 chances to put Tennessee away.
Yeah, but like then every time, you know, it'd be like the Tennessee would get the ball back and Jalen Hyatt just go be standing in the field by himself. Yeah. Like, hey, what's up?
You're right. It was amazing. And it's I think it'll be a far different environment on Saturday. I think Bama pummels Tennessee because I think Saban, That game hit him hard. He's had a year to think about it and prepare for it.
See, I think Bama wins, but I don't think they pummel them.
I do. I think they're going to go after Tennessee. There's
Saban's angry. There's a lot of hate there. You're right.
Saban's angry. I mean, that game, and then what happened after the game on the field.
You want to talk about getting respect back. This is, if Tennessee goes to Tuscaloosa and they win this game, then all of a sudden they are now in the conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
They are back in the conversation once
100%.
Again. 100%. We'll talk more about that. But coming up next, John McClain going to join us from Houston. We'll get into the NFL and the Titans with him for 30 minutes. We'll do that next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.